Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Get in the guts, Barry.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct
answers, did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world. The greatest
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel, 3CR's look at the Australian film industry and the films that come out of it and other moving image products. And today we're going to be focusing on a documentary called Bay Views for All, The Fight to Save Barrack Beacons Public Housing Estate. It's going to be launched at the RMIT Dwelling Justice event on Wednesday the 26th. It's going to be on at 6 to 8pm. There's going to be panel discussions after the film, and you can get there at Building 80. Go to Building 80 at RMIT and then there'll be signposting to the event. The event is being handled by Humanitex, so you can probably get yourself a ticket. So from housing crisis to dwelling justice is the event. And as I said, it's on the 26th of November on Wednesday, the 6pm to 8pm. And I got to speak to Isaac Khan, who is the cinematographer for the project. The project called, of course, Bay Views for All. And they are launching it on Wednesday. But they say that you can go to barrackbeacon.com and host a screening with your community, because this is a really big event. Before we get on to that interview, I want to highlight a film that has just opened in theatres. It's not an Australian film, but it is a film that concerns all Australians. It's called Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk. It's the most amazing film. It's by director Sipite Fassi, an Iranian filmmaker. And what it is a chronicling of her conversations with a young woman, Fatim, who is a photographer, who a 24-year-old woman who, with her family, were caught in Gaza. So it's for the whole year that follows through 2024, before Fatim and her six family members were killed in the Israeli onslaught in Gaza. It's the most extraordinary film because it's so up close and personal. And what a darling she was, a complete darling. And it just puts everything into perspective. It'd be a shame not to go and see the film, just to honour her and also to understand the complexities and the intimacy of the murder that is being taken place, the genocide as it continues in Palestine. Anyway, we'll continue with the show, Showreel on 3CR. We'll talk with Isaac Akane about Bay Views for All. How did you get involved with making the film Bay Views for Everybody?
So I had already done some documentary work around housing and homelessness with Housing for the Age Action Group. And I think that that was an avenue for me to get to know people in that space. And that's how I heard that some residents at Barrack Beacon were fighting their eviction. So that's when I decided to head down and start talking to some of the residents.
Okay, and so why do you think it's so important to be making a film about such an event as this?
Yeah, I think a film like that, I guess, you know, my main intention firstly was to, you know, in the more pure sense of being a documentarian, just to really document that process that was ongoing. We didn't know like where everything was going to head, but we know that the state government wanted to evict and redevelop the site. So I guess my intention was to capture those stories and those people that were trying to stop it. And I guess like in a way it was a way to be able later on to tell a different side of the story, because the louder side was the side of the state government, but there were many more stories that were not being told. And my intention was to be able to give voice to some of these other stories that, you know, they also had the right to be heard.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this particular attack on public housing was that the residents, and you show it in the film, are in situ in a very comfortable living space originally.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, those, the Barrack Beacon Estate was actually, you know, they had their own front yards or big balconies, and many of the residents had gardens, and they had common spaces with playgrounds, and of course they were just a waterfront of the bay. So I guess that's also what it made it so appealing to developers.
The film actually goes into what is a relatively a bit of subterfuge, really, on the part of the government, in the sense that they were talking about the place requiring redevelopment because they were going to make more houses on the same spot, and that the place was run down, and
right.
And they even were talking about things like Homes Victoria were spearheading a challenge to the housing crisis, and that Barrack Beacon was just a necessary element of removal,
yeah,
to get on with that business. And you were able to document that.
That's right. And I think that, I mean, there's multiple parts of that, I guess, PR campaign of the government that that are completely untrue. I mean, from the start, like all the billions that they announced for this big housing build, it was marketed as like they were going to create thousands of new social housing units. They never called them again public housing. But also what they didn't say is that they were going to demolish so many public housing units that actually the cost per every new extra unit was, extraordinary. The other thing is that the residents were never consulted. I think the residents were never a centerpiece of any of the decision making of the government. It actually was the last sort of problem for the government to resolve. And that kind of shows as well in the way that we're told. A week before Christmas, a bunch of bureaucrats and state government employees just got to Barrack Beacon and started knocking doors and handing out letters. And of course, many people as well, English wasn't their first language. So a lot of people were really confused, and some people had heard to panic attacks. And, you know, it was 1 week before Christmas, then everything shut down and they didn't know anything for more than a month. that kind of shows, like, the, I guess, the level of disregard or the priorities of the government in actually taking care of public housing tenants.
It's a real expose of class struggle too, isn't it? There was a whole range of really interesting personal stories that you actually explore in this film, like down to the young man, relatively young man, who's mother lived in the house, or grandmother, was it?
The grandmother, yeah.
Yeah, and she'd been there for 40 years, and so it had become the family home. It's a very important thing for people to understand the concept of public housing as people's family home.
That's right, and yeah, particularly in that story, he mentions as well how, because his grandmother had passed away a couple of years prior, and how he actually was happy that all this happened after the grandmother had passed away, because she would have been heartbroken by all this process. And even, yeah, that sense of home, that's actually part of the film, right? Like, that was it wasn't just like a home for the residents, it was their community. And some of them had been living there for decades, and they got given no choice but to actually just pick up an offer that the government was going to give them. And what's true as well is that people that the most vulnerable ones were also the ones to quickly accept the offers of the state government to be relocated elsewhere, just because the fear of actually losing their home.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The government actually has a lot to answer for, targeting the most vulnerable people in the community. You also show in the film quite clearly and succinctly, by going to speak to experts from RMIT and as well as architects, who dispel many of the arguments that the Victorian government has put forward.
Yeah, that's right. There was a proposal from an architect group called Office to actually renovate the state without having to relocate the residents, and also uplift the number of units in the state. That was never considered by the state government. The academics from RMIT, they kind of really untangle the realities of the, I think it's 5.2 or $5.3 billion big housing build of the state government, that it was announced with, you know, a lot of hopes, but then themselves, when they started to look in detail on what that meant, they quickly realized that actually what that was, it was an attack on, and it was a way of privatizing the whole public housing estate in Victoria, which and that first stage, well, and actually Barrack Beacon wasn't exactly the first, but in that first tranche, that, you know, how the government kind of started in this process of privatizing. And I think almost like when Barrack Beacon was already being demolished, that's when they announced that they were going to do the same with the 44 towers of public housing around Melbourne. So I think, like, also with this story, I think that the positives is that I think it's helped galvanize support and also warn other public housing tenants elsewhere in Victoria of what's for them. And I think that's a very important aspect as well.
Yeah, I think so too. The film is very clear, and it takes people through a clear statement without actually pointing the finger at the government, in the sense that it's possible for you to see quite clearly that the government created a public relations campaign which really took none of the residents into account, the citizens that lived there, and they made some sort of private deal behind the scenes with private developers to hand over public land to those private developers, and they've renamed public housing, and its actual relevance has been undone, because it's now called social housing, and it's run not by the government but by private not-for-profits. This is a wholesale turning their back on their responsibilities as a government to the citizens of Victoria, really.
Yeah, that's right. I think that, you know, the government It's shown that, you know, and following models from the UK and the US, they just wanted to get rid of that responsibility of taking care of public housing estates along Victoria. Plus, thing that also there's, you know, coming at the back of COVID, there was probably a sense of trying to help the development and the building industry, just handing out cash, really, just to and build new housing, because I think that that's you know, that's clear when you see that they wouldn't want to do anything about renovation or upgrades. They just wanted to tear the whole state down and build it again, which, you know, again, their marketing was very clear. They wanted to build more efficient homes and being more environmentally friendly. But what they didn't mention is that actually, what's the cost of demolishing all those concrete houses and then build something new in its spot?
Yeah, it is interesting because the film is very careful about the way it exposes this, because the claim is that it's going to be more sustainable, but in actual fact it points out something that most people don't even think about, which is the incredible level of energy that is required in knocking down and building up.
Yeah, it's an incredible wasteful operation. If you look at it also, like, I guess, like, really if from a pure economic sense, this doesn't make sense other than just for developers, because you know, the costs of relocating residents, that's not accounted. We don't know what's the cost of that, and then, you know, the cost of building new social housing units, it's much higher than what actually they say, and then the social costs as well. Like, that's so I think, like, if we look at it from an economic sense, it's just really like another example of handouts for you know, for whoever are their friends and whoever has influence on decision makers.
Well, if you go down to that area, and you do take us down to that area in the film, you can see that the amenity of the place is so pleasant. You can see why they wanted to get rid of those pesky public housing people so that they could create a haven for people who had more money.
Yeah, and I mean, there's, like, I think one of my favorite fragments or shots of the film is at one stage with Margaret outside in the corner, and she's looking across the road to the new sort of development with, like, you know, kind of high-end houses and apartments, and she's reminiscing on when she first came down to have a look at Barrack Beacon, like, decades ago. And she was thinking, oh, I've got the city just right there. I've got the ocean, the bay just in front of me. And I don't know why people wouldn't want to move down here. And then she says, like, I wish I just had kept that thought from myself.
And yeah, that's right. She also said that she had friends who said, oh, aren't you frightened of walking down the street down there?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And I mean, yeah, I think, like, I guess it's another sort of example of gentrification and the commodification as well of public spaces, in a way, and public resources that we're seeing with this, because the whole model of the state government as well, they call it, like, the the build to lease or land lease model, which it means that they lease the land to for developers to develop it, and then they lease the housing estates to this not-for-profit housing corporations for 40 years, and then after 40 years it comes back to the government. So in a way, like, we hand it over so that they can be run, and then in 40 years the public will have to pay again to developers to tear it down and just build it once again.
Yeah,
so
right.
Way, so that process that and they put it in a way out there to say, like, we're not selling public land, but actually what they're doing is again, helping privatize the profits, and we socialize the cost.
Oh, and also by calling it not-for-profit housing concerns, and this is not saying all of them are the same, but what they're doing is creating potentially a whole economic sector that is very right. close to the old idea of a slum landlord.
Yeah, that's right.
The
conditions are not the same as well for if you are on social housing or community housing. You need to pay a bit more of your income than if you're in public housing. So there are differences. So it's
Decide not to take you on because you're not earning enough money to pay the rent that they're asking.
That's right. That's right. So it's that chipping away of rights that we see constantly, and they're all masqueraded with these very fancy and effective marketing campaigns.
Well, the problem for people who are on lower incomes or people who are struggling to find a roof over their heads anyway, even if they're working, is that the government's talking about the need for supplying more housing, but they're not supplying housing for people who were living in public housing. Where do they go?
That's right. That's right. I mean, that's a really good question, and I think that the Safe Public Housing campaign that's going on at the moment, I think it's proof that the government has a lot to answer, and I think that people are organizing and they're putting up a fight because you can try to cover up your intentions, but you can only do it for so long. So I think that and the rest of the community are becoming aware that that this doesn't stack up.
Yeah, the other thing is that the name of the film, Bay Views for Everyone, it's such a refreshing title because it really puts everything into perspective, doesn't it? Because it's what they're saying is, just recently there's this scandal about, and this is in New South Wales, in Sydney, where a large, expensive development was supposed to, have private and social housing. But the people who are in the social housing section can only go through the back door, and they're not allowed to use any of the amenities. So what they're doing is creating a whole tier of second-class citizens in a country that has previously considered itself proud of its sense of equality.
That's right. And the same thing's happened in Victoria already. I can't remember which development, but and the same. So, of course, like in the same where Bag Beacon was, there will be... So there's like a higher density of residences, of dwellings, and there will be social housing. But of course, there will be like, and it's a larger proportion of private housing as well, for rental, but also for just in the open market. Of course, like the ones that that will have the babies will be the private market ones. And another thing which is, I think it's quite interesting too, is that this new sort of newer development that was next to Barrack Beacon, some people had some support for Barrack Beacon while the campaign was going on, but there wasn't much fuss on about it. But then when they heard of the number of floors of some of the buildings that we're going to build
Obstruct their view.
The new, well, more like the density and how many new dwellings will be. then they actually got upset. So it kind of like shows as well, like I guess like that we were talking about before, you know, like how I guess like...
How little the government actually considers the people who live in these places.
Totally, totally.
Nobody gets asked about anything.
No, I think that it's all deals that are done behind behind doors. And in fact, as well, when talking with the RMIT folks, they didn't know that Barry Beacon was going to be part of this next phase of the projects that we're going to
You mean tackle. The big build?
Yeah, the big bill, the number that they were going to put in, and it was just added on the last minute. So
incentivized and recapitalized the site for the private enterprise.
Well, I guess like we don't know why it was added on the last minute. Maybe it was a demand of somebody, or maybe it was just like they were looking for a more attractive piece of land. And Barrack Beacon was exactly that, just right in front of the water.
Goodness me. Wow, that's interesting. This is not that this has got very much to do with this in particular, but I've noticed because I've been down Brighton way lately that there's all these signs on some of the houses saying, this isn't the Gold Coast, no towers for the bay. And on the Instagram the other day, there's a picture of a woman from down that way saying the socialist government is trying to build towers in our area. And someone has written, if they think this government's a socialist government, imagine what would happen when the revolution came.
Yeah, I guess, you know, there's, I think like...
Anyway, they're making more than public housing tenants angry.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I think that definitely what I saw down there at Barrack Beacon was already like a community that was completely being dismantled.
Yeah.
And it was being dismantled at the whim of, you know, some bureaucrats on the desk just deciding that that was going to happen. And no one really went down to talk to those residents before that decision was made. And I think that that's probably just one of the saddest things.
Where are you hoping to show the film? Or are you going to put it up on YouTube for people to look at?
So there's next week there's a screening as part of the forum on dwelling justice that RMIT are putting on. And that's next Wednesday at 6 p.m. We'll see what other opportunities come up for a screening, and then it will likely be made available publicly too.
And that was Isaac Kane, who is the cinematographer for the film Bay Views for All, and he's right, it's going to be launched at a forum that's being held at RMIT on the 26th of November, Wednesday, 6 to 8. It's in Building 80, From Housing Crisis to Dwelling Justice. The film's going to be launched and there's going to be panel discussions. And you can go to barrackbeacon.com to host a screening with your community. Coming up next is Published or Not. We're going to go out with The Other Side, the Ought Weavers. This is the first month I ever knew.
but it's yawning wide. You take me to the other side, to the other side.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.